at a certain point, humans have to trust something or somebody. Now, those of us in this space, we don't want rulers, but we like rules. And we like transparent rules that everybody can see. But every time we say that the crypto space is something that is without intermediaries, new intermediaries creep up. You know, they pop up to actually fill a void for things, to provide trust. But I like the idea of either a multi-sig provider or you doing that manually. So if you have 24 seed words, some here, some there, make it complicated enough that it's difficult, but not so complicated that nobody can get it. Because now we're trusting that this person is going to survive us. What if that person predeceases and has not taken care of the seed words that they receive? That's problematic as well. So I don't want to be so complicated and so distributed and disaggregated that we cut off our nose to spite our face, which is a terrible, terrible phrase, but hopefully everybody gets it.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now, and it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, this is your host with the most, Professor Tanya Evans, and I'm really excited this week to do something new, to do a crossover podcast. I had the great fortune of sitting down with Roy Coughlin last week to record an episode for his podcast, The Crypto Podcast. So we got on so well, and it turned out to be such a great episode, and to support a fellow podcaster who also is head over heels involved in the crypto space, we thought it'd be fun to do a crossover episode. So in episode 49 of the Crypto Podcast, hosted by Roy, he invited me on to talk about the Digital Money Demystified program that I've developed, the book and the bundle as well. I talked about my journey into the crypto and blockchain space. I talked about my experience and expertise as an intellectual property lawyer and how I became fascinated with blockchains, which essentially are open source software protocols, and what that meant for ownership of digital assets in the new crypto economy. And also another area of my expertise, maybe a little known fact, but I started out my professional career, my law career, in the trust and estates department of two major national law firms. And I also teach wills, trusts, and estates. So that was an interesting area for us to talk about what estate planning means for the acquisition and the protection, and then ultimately the transfer of cryptocurrency-based wealth. And so that's an interesting part of our conversation that I wanted to share with you all. Then we got into some of the hot news topics, FTX and regulation, talked about Binance and its corporate structure. And then we talked about the forthcoming book, my forthcoming book, Digital Money Demystified. And I wanted to present an opportunity for you all that's a win-win. I need your support to let certainly distributors and buyers, booksellers, to know that a voice like mine and the expertise that I have is really important to help demystify digital assets, to really prepare people to enter this new opportunity, the new economy, but to do so safely, legally, and confidently. And so that's why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, to separate fact from fiction, to provide you a clear roadmap to go safely, legally, and confidently from cash into the crypto ecosystem, and to do some myth busting. You've heard some of these things, perhaps you even believe them. Crypto has no value, only for criminals, unregulated, just one big scam, too volatile, just a passing fad or a bubble waiting to burst, too complicated, difficult to use, isn't secure, bad for the environment, anonymous, untraceable, and the list goes on and on. So I take the top myths and do some myth busting, right sizing. There's sometimes a kernel of truth in every myth, and we talk about and through that. Now, here's the win-win. If you go to now to digitalmoneydemystified.com, you'll learn two things. First is how to pre-order this book, how to let the industry and distributors and booksellers know that this is an important book at an important time. It's actually the book that you buy before you take a deeper dive. There are plenty of books and courses. I even offer courses that exist about crypto fundamentals or which assets to invest in and all of that. This is not an investment book. This book, Digital Money Demystified, is the book that you read before you dive into those so that you can make sense of this, make informed choices and decisions about what your next book will be, what your course will be, what your coaching plan will be, where you go to do your own research. Start with Digital Money Demystified. Now, get all excited. You pre-order the book and then you realize it doesn't get to you until October. So I have developed an opportunity for you to have immediate access to the Digital Money Demystified Quick Start Bundle. What does the bundle include? The Future of Wealth Fundamentals mini course. You can make your way through it in about 60 to 90 minutes. Self-guided. I will have some AI-enabled instructors there to help you along as well. That's been exciting to put together. I welcome you. And then we get started with lesson one that deals with terms and just an investor overview. Sometimes we have to take a step back to really get some investor-based fundamentals before understanding and fully appreciating the crypto space. Then I teach you how to vet and select and protect your coins and tokens and even the difference between a coin and a token. And then we talk about self-custody, also how to passively earn crypto while you learn, which is an important and fun way to have a little bit of skin in the game, but to do so responsibly and not losing the farm. This is not a casino or gambling. If you're looking for that, this is the wrong program and the wrong book for you, but a way to learn how to passively earn while you learn and also to invest responsibly based upon my prudent crypto investor strategy and my secure advantage strategy to avoid scams as well. Then I round out this fundamentals quick mini course with crypto tax best practices, bring it all together. That's just the first part in this bundle that will sell for $497. Digital Money Demystified, the toolkit. There's a crypto lingo glossary, a risk tolerance assessment, how to avoid the 10 worst mistakes that new and inexperienced crypto investors make, your From Cash to Crypto Fast Action Checklist, and your Get Ready, Stay Ready Guide. And then the third part of the bundle includes some bonus material that I continue to add to as I continue to build out this Quick Start Bundle. But you can have access not for $497 or not to the pre-launch price of $47, but for free $99. That is FREE.99. Free 99, you send me your receipt that you have pre-ordered the book, either in its Kindle or printed book edition. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care how you get here. Just get here if you can. Thank you, Alita Adams. But send me your receipt. Send it to hello@techintersectpodcast.com. That's hello@techintersectpodcast.com. You send me the receipt. I send you complimentary access to the Digital Money Demystified Quick Start Bundle to get you started quickly. Let's not wait for the book to come out. Let's order the book. And then while we're waiting, let's dive into the Quick Start Bundle so that you can get up and running quickly. All right. So I've told you about the book. I've told you about the bundle. I've told you about this offer. Now let's get you into this crossover episode with Roy Coughlin, host of the Crypto Podcast, episode 49. Have a listen. Let me know what you think. Be good to yourself and others and enjoy.
My guest today, professor, financial freedom futurist, and author of Digital Money Demystified, speaker, crypto policy and education advisor, and more importantly, a podcaster, which I always love to speak to. Please welcome Tanya Evans.
Thank you so much, Roy. I'm really excited to connect with you. And this is our favorite topic. So I always love to find someone who's also a podcaster who loves this game too.
Exactly. So, I mean, I've just kind of hit the bullet points, but you might just kind of introduce yourself a bit, because I know you've studied and you've done a lot of stuff ahead of the curve So I'll let the listeners know a little bit more about you.
Absolutely. Well, my rabbit hole experience started in 2017. I am a lawyer by training. I practiced for 10 years before I started teaching. I'm a tenured professor at Penn State Dickinson Law School, and I'm going into my 16th or 17th year, which is, it's like young on the outside, but evidently, you know, we, you know, go a little deeper. I've been on the earth for about 5 decades or so, but who's counting? And I'm a writer, speaker, and teacher, but I'm also a lifelong learner. I'm not a technologist or a computer scientist, but I am always, well, I'm intellectually curious, and I'm usually an early adopter. Even from back in the day, I'm a Gen Xer, so I was the first one to have an Atari or in television, the first person to have a ginormous phone on my shoulder, like that kind of kid. And so with that curiosity, but it comes kind of at odds sometimes with being a lawyer, when I'm also trained to be highly risk adverse, to find every problem and to save clients from, tell them in 50 pages what's wrong and why they can't do something. Underneath that, I'm a problem solver. And that's why I love technology so much, because it's tinkering and iterating to try and make something better, faster, cheaper. And then when I, in 2017, when I saw some other professors starting to write about the intersection of intellectual property and open source software in the blockchain space, and that caught my curiosity, although I, at the time I didn't know about this magic internet money and didn't know the connection at the time between the first use case of distributed ledgers and programmable money. But in order to really understand it and to make sure that my law students understood, I had to learn enough, not only to be dangerous, but to be helpful. And so I remember in the winter of 2017, kind of going on YouTube University, our favorite place to be, and every question led to 10 more like really interesting things. And I was still in my pajamas after probably like 2 weeks, missed Christmas dinner, came out of my room. I was at my mom's house at the time. It's like, oh my God, this is going to change the world. I have to tell everyone. And I took a deep dive where I was as an intellectual property lawyer and professor and a technology lawyer. I was never going to know all the things about all the things. I think you can appreciate that. But I could take a deep dive in my existing expertise to figure out how this technology could be transformative. What was the power and the promise of it, but also the pitfalls. And then finally, that just led to developing a blockchain, crypto, and law online certificate program, teaching blockchain and every course that is related to that, privacy, crypto economics, tokenomics, things like that, to really get the next wave of lawyers to be conversant so that they can show up for Web3 builders and everybody can get what they need. So that's kind of, you know, I created a company as well outside of the law school environment, because I just didn't want to talk to lawyers and law students, but I really wanted to empower people that this technology was intended to empower. And it's kind of like the rest of us. And so that's how I got into the space.
So with the IP, what's the difference or what things should be people careful for when it's a normal product IP as opposed to a crypto or digital or blockchain IP?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the first things I wrote was this article titled CryptoKitties Cryptography and Copyright. That really gets to the heart of the intersection of intellectual property and open source software. Had to dive into smart contracts. As a lawyer, when I hear the word contract, it means something as a matter of law that's different than our common understanding of that term. And so just getting underneath what it means to automate performance in ways that make things more streamlined, in obviously in the DeFi space. And when I think about non-fungible tokens, and so that paper really got at the heart of what has changed about digital ownership that makes things better, but also creates a lot of concerns for people who are creating digital projects. Now, when I think of this, is the Satoshi white paper, and even just the first reason that Bitcoin came on the scene with a gangster lien, it was really about avoiding the double spend problem. When you think about using peer-to-peer technology, and one of the biggest problems in the entertainment space was that I could have a perfect MP3, send it to you and a thousands of my not so closest friends, but I still had the original. And that was never going to work for money, right? Transition that to creativity as well, that still presents a problem. But now the technology actually has a really great solution for that. But with that solution of being able to authenticate things, the difficulty in replicating with non-fungible tokens, the token is not the creativity. So I think that confused a lot of people. The token itself is an asset that is connected through its metadata to something else, right? It could be a digital project. It could be an IRL, in real life experience. So it's kind of unpacking where is the art, how to store it. If there's infringement, how to take it down. If we're thinking about like IPFS and store it, decentralized file storage, that's not going to work really well for the ability of people to combat infringement. It presents some interesting questions about whether you could take down something that's infringing. So I don't always have the answer, but I spend a lot of time thinking about the benefits of this technology to empower artists and things of that nature, but also some of the drawbacks that the law is in tension with because it doesn't have a great solution for it now.
And just an experience that I had myself, but I know it's kind of common, is OpenSea. There was somebody that was selling kind of digital art, but it was with the utilities. And right. I could see that there was a lot of fraud going on, a lot of bots, and you could see the... And I mean, the reality is if the person doesn't buy it, the next highest bidder gets it. And then they removed it and took it off. Like, is there ways of actually going after them for that? Or that, can people just do what they want? Because the reality is if they're promoting something and you're intentionally wanting to buy it at a certain price and then you don't get it for that price, have you got a case?
It's so tough because the short answer is even when the law is on your side, if you can't enforce it, it kind of makes your rights meaningless, which is getting to your point. And I think as this technology and the law continues to develop, many of the exchanges, let me take a step back. From an exchange's point of view, OpenSea and the OpenSeas of the world say, hey, we're just bringing buyers and sellers together. Right? Let the buyer beware just in this market. And we've seen that when like the eBays of the world first came into full view and people started really engaging with online commerce, that was an original question because you also had to identify where the person is and what role the exchange has in protecting people who are using the exchange. I did a study of a lot of the terms and conditions of use across a lot of platforms to answer or at least address some of these questions. And the exchanges want to have as little legal liability as humanly possible. And it also depends on what country you're in, right? We're dealing with global technology. We've addressed some of these questions when the internet or Web 2.0 first really came online and into full view to connect people across these geographical boundaries and borders that we have. It makes it even more complex when you add on-chain activity and recording on-chain activity with bots that are involved. I think that the exchanges have to step up and be held to account. They're not going to do it on their own because they want to limit their liability. But when they are creating an opportunity and benefiting from that as well, as you said, they have a higher role to play. And there are some rules in the United States, for the example, for online service providers to, even if they don't have the technology, and I think they do, let's say they don't have the technology to police things all day, every day, right? But once they are on notice that there is some potentially infringing or fraudulent activity, they have a responsibility to do something. And the law defines what that is, and they have to be held account. Otherwise, these platforms are not going to be safe. And that is not what we need in the industry, particularly at this time, and given the crypto contagion of 2022, for sure.
I know you talk about trusts. So I just kind of double question here. One, can person put their crypto assets into a trust? And two, because a trust is kind of good in a way that if you pass on, you're not paying, you know, the inheritance tax and all this different thing. But the other side of the fence then is, how do we have a system that when somebody does pass on, if they've got 10 billion in crypto and somebody doesn't know their pass, how can we have a safe system that people can use that it's their, you know, children or whoever gets the assets?
Yeah, I really love this topic. And I don't think enough people are talking about it because we're getting to the point where people, particularly those who have significant assets in the crypto space, they're usually the one person in their family that's like, I'm going to create this generational wealth, all of this. But the rest of their family, one, thinks they're crazy. And two, would not even know where their cold storage is or what cold storage is or how to turn on and access devices. And you can spend all of your time and all of your money going, as I say, from cash to crypto. Brilliant. But if nobody can access it when you're not here, and we've heard all the, you know, we've seen these, or maybe, and I've personally experienced this cautionary tale. Thankfully, I'm still here. But there's some cold storage somewhere in the world that has at least a half Bitcoin on the ledger failed. And at the time, this was, I think I set that up in 2020. Yeah, 2019, 2020. Maybe before that, because I was in my right mind by 2020. But I didn't fully appreciate at the time that it wasn't so much about the device, but the seeds. Seeds are life. And so what I teach at Advantage Evans Academy, anybody who comes through or part of my membership, devices may come and go. Seeds are forever. And if you really want to be your own bank, and if you really want autonomy, if you really want an alternative to fiat-based value, you've got to be responsible for this and have a succession plan that moves it from you so that somebody else has some control and has some access. Now, that is counterintuitive sometimes when people are like, but it's mine and I want to, yeah, until you're not here. The whole point of this is to have freedom, to create the type of financial privacy and freedom that really gives you options. If you hamstring your family to not have access to that, that's a problem. I actually started my legal career in the trust and estates department of big firms. And so I was working with a lot of high net worth individuals at the time. This was before crypto was even a thing. And I believe very strongly in setting up trusts. Now, trusts are governed, generally speaking, by state law here in the United States. So every state is different. So we have to kind of talk at a and then other countries are very different. So we have to talk at a high level about the benefits. And then, of course, check with your legal counsel about what makes sense for you and your jurisdiction. But the ability, and I can speak here from a United States point of view, particularly in Pennsylvania, I'm licensed in New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and DC. And so there are many advantages to setting up the terms of a trust that are also private. When I was in full-time practice, I was also working with not only high net worth individuals, but athletes and entertainers. Most of them do not want us to know who's in their family and what they're doing with their money. You can do that through the terms of a trust. You can't do that through the terms of a will because wills become public records. They become public records and people can see everything. That's why I think of like Michael Jackson. He had one of the best, what we call pour over wills. The will was probably about one page. And it basically gave some details that you would already know from the news. And then the rest of that poured into anything that was left poured into a trust that had been set up. And the trust is where the magic happened. This can really be great in the crypto space because you can appoint, for example, a special designated trustee that is very well versed in crypto. It could be some type of corporate entity if you're into that thing. You may involve some type of multi-sig account as well. You can have very specific instructions that are not public, but must be known to your family or a trusted advisor or a trustee so that they can actually access it. They have seed words. They know where your stuff is. They know where it's safe and can move forward. So I love this. And I feel like more people need to start to explore this as a potential.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
And like what I see is because unfortunately, not all lawyers are ethical. And I don't know, is it that, you know, if it's a 20 seed phrase that, you know, like you've got five with the lawyer, five with the accountant, and but that they're not really connected as such. Because giving it to one person, it's okay if it's a couple of, you know, Ethereum or something like that. But if it becomes millions, a guy can just disappear overnight. And that's the fair.
Absolutely. And what you've just described is a way for us manually to do what a multi-sig provider might do, right? When I think of even, like, think of exchanges. They go through this same thing, too, where they have to have this multi-layer connection so that there's no one person who has all of the power. right? We're actually disaggregating or distributing the power, which is really part of the ethos and the spirit of the crypto space too. At a certain point, humans have to trust something or somebody. Now, those of us in this space, we don't want rulers, but we like rules and we like transparent rules that everybody can see. But every time we say that the crypto space is something that is without intermediaries, new intermediaries creep up. You know, they pop up to actually fill a void for things, to provide trust. But I like the idea of either a multi-sig provider or you doing that manually. So if you have 24 seed words, some here, some there, make it complicated enough that it's difficult, but not so complicated that nobody can get it. Because now we're trusting that this person is going to survive us. What if that person predeceases and has not taken care of the seed words that they receive? That's problematic as well. So I don't want to be so complicated and so distributed and disaggregated that we cut off our nose to spite our face, which is a terrible, terrible phrase, but hopefully everybody gets it.
Exactly. And with the regulation then, because, you know, like I know that you're kind of involved with policy and everything. So I just kind of like to know your thoughts on it, especially with the FTX and all that has happened with that.
Yeah, I've had some really interesting conversations on my own pod. My podcast is called Tech Intersect. And recently I had Hester Peirce, commissioner from the Securities and Exchange Commission. I had Paul Graywall on, the chief legal officer at Coinbase. And Paul and I testified together before Congress, before the House Financial Services Committee's subcommittee on digital assets, fintech, and inclusion, and had the opportunity to really talk about the uncertainty of the regulatory environment and how it could be better if, particularly, and I'll go there to talk about the concerns about the SEC in particular. I think the CFTC is working pretty well. But we have the Commodities and Futures Trading Commission on one side, and they have relatively limited power, and they're focused specifically on commodities. Everyone seems to agree that Bitcoin is a commodity, and it was from day one. From January 3rd, 2009, Bitcoin was a commodity, not a security. You can create a security that involves Bitcoin, but Bitcoin as the underlying asset is not. For the other 23,000 coins and tokens, there doesn't seem to be agreement or consensus, even by the leaders of the regulatory agencies, specifically the CFTC and the SEC. CFTC says, for example, ETH is a commodity. It started out as an ICO, but at this point in time, there is no central party that is in control. You have people who have some influence, and some may have more influence than the others, but they don't define the direction of it. Nobody is waiting for anyone connected like Vitalik to do something so that the price of my ETH goes up. It just isn't the way that it functions. But Gary Gensler at the SEC would not agree and has, through a mechanism that we refer to as regulation by enforcement, and I'll explain a little bit more about what that means, the idea of suing an individual or a few folks, putting in a bunch of assumed facts, trying to win that case, and then having that case law serve as some type of cautionary tale to everybody else in the community, which makes no sense. The SEC does have enforcement power to sue people, one company, one person, one entity. But another part of their power, and they have a lot of discretion whether to use regulation by enforcement or to create rules for an entire industry. And that's what the industry is asking for, because a legal action against one person means that applies just to that one. It doesn't necessarily apply to everybody else. So that's no way to give any single signal or any clarity or any confidence for those who are building in the space, which means most people are going to leave the United States and go somewhere, at least where it's more clear. It may be difficult, but at least if you know the framework, the rules of the engagement, how much it's going to cost, how much time it's going to take to become compliant, then you can make business decisions that support robust industry and development in emerging asset class in an emerging industry. We're doing it all wrong here in the United States. We're falling behind. There's a lot of discretion and power with the SEC, and it's in the hands of Congress or the courts. That's where it's probably going to be settled. Congress actually creates and empowers agencies, interestingly. But it's the courts that are going to settle a dispute about this. And we see a really great game of chicken with huge consequences between Coinbase and the SEC, for example, now.
And like with people looking at what Congress has done over the years and just the fraud that goes on. I mean, a lot of people just want to stay clear. They want to stay clear of it till something goes wrong, and then they want to be protected because it's a catch 22, basically, where we're at.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting when you have technology that disrupts sectors and industries that are already heavily regulated, it doesn't make sense to expect there to be no regulation, right? But you do want it to be clear. So the first major disruption happened in finance and banking, one of the most heavily regulated industries in the world. And necessarily so, because they are based on government issued currency or fiat used to fund wars and do all sorts of things. That's a podcast for another day. Fine. All right. So, unless you have your own private island or your own private planet and people are working on that, it is the system that we have. You can try and opt out as much as you want, but, and this is the problem with, and maybe we can talk for a couple of minutes about Operation Choke Point 2.0, and even what that means. And it's not a declared policy. So Choke Point, long story short, 1.0 was under the Obama administration. It was an actual policy to cut off the banking rails for certain industries, payday lending, certain things that were deemed to be very harmful and injurious to consumers, predatory lending, blah, blah, blah. That kind of crashed and burned because it was seemed to be an improper use of government power. And so they went, that approach failed. Now it seems like we have the same thing for crypto, but it's not a declared policy. But if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, right? Looks like a duck. In my humble estimation, it's the same thing. Warning banks not to bank the crypto industry, all under the same time when actual banks are failing. It's like, you have enough problems, go deal with your banking system, and don't have policies that are over-inclusive, meaning you may get a few bad actors, and we want all of them out like yesterday, but you're going to take down a whole lot of legitimate businesses in the process, and we've seen that. Or under-inclusive, you focus on the really good actors, like the Coinbases of the world and Gemini. Think of the Winklevoss brothers, some of the best people in the industry, some of the OGs in the space that are getting caught up. And then you have FTX and all of that foolery that have hurt, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are involved, millions of dollars. How does something like that happen? And then you tie up Coinbase and Gemini. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So we have a lot of problems to work through in the space. I think it is intentional. I think it's a concerted effort. And I think that it has now become a political issue when it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be a political issue. This is technology in the same way that semiconductor chips is business, right? So that's a great concern of mine. Spent a lot of time working with policy and education for lawmakers to see the benefits and deal with, I don't want consumers and investors hurt, but we have to find a better way.
And with Binance, because Binance would be one of the top ones as well. And I know I mentioned it on the previous show, but when I was just going through that, I was looking at the regulation where they were actually signing off on it. And the accountant firm signed it the name of the company, not a person, which means that doesn't stand. Mm-hmm. You can't sign something as the name of the company. And this is Binance. So is there any real safety out there?
Binance is a sticky wicket. I learned that when I do my international travel, because CZ is an interesting character, right? I don't think he's particularly, now this is my humble estimation, I do not know him, but what I've seen over the years is really pushing back on regs. There are a lot of things that kind of go on behind the scenes, and it makes it really difficult to stand 100% and be fully throated behind everything. Now, I have used Binance in the past, Binance.us is set up and fully compliant, but you have all this other stuff going on. And without knowing more about what you were referring to, there is the reality that in the States, corporations are people too. There's a Supreme Court case that supports that, that a corporation can have all the rights and privileges of a human so that people can hide behind the shield of, or the how do we say, behind the curtain of a company to be separate and apart from it, right? So even more than an LLC, you set up a corporation or all these other things, and then the corp is on the hook instead of the individual. which makes it more complex. That's why there's a lot of sophisticated layering of corporate entities around the world to give further distance from the person. But at a certain point, the government can do what we call pierce the corporate veil. So it's like, yeah, you have a corporate structure, but this is really you. And we're going to pierce beyond it and go after individuals. So it's kind of like a both and thing. It's very complicated and it's like a case by case situation. But evidently, corporations are people too. This is breaking news.
So you mentioned the tech, your podcast.
Yeah.
So you might just kind of talk a bit more about it. Like, I think, was it the December? So you're doing it since 2019. So
That's right.
And you mentioned, because prior to recording, you were saying you're doing a few solos. My very first one was like 2 minutes doing solo. And you, like, I've done 1,000 podcasts, but I don't do solo. It's hard. Doing solo is hard. And I'm just curious how you find it. And then about your different guests as well, what kind of you've kind of done on your shows.
So I am so proud of myself because you know firsthand how difficult it is to be consistent, right? And I have a few other things going on, a full tenure professor, have this other business, but I was committed to giving a voice to first, and it started out kind of just my process to help people who aren't technologists, maybe not computer scientists, although I have a lot of technologists, computer scientists, fintech folks who listen now. The original part was like, what is this space? How do we make sense of it? And let's get some people on here who know, specifically focused at the intersection of technology, business, and law. So, you know, I cast a wide net, although recently I've had far more topics about crypto assets, blockchain, fintech, the future of ... So like the future of work, the future of money, the future of creativity, the future of law. What does it look like now that we are moving into Web3 and beyond? And so I have a lot of guests who fit into that mold. Yes, as I said, Hester Peirce, Paul Graywall. I actually had Mark Wiegand, who was like some type of chief officer with FTX about 3 weeks before FTX went under. So you all, that's a little teaser. Go back and listen to my episode with Mark Wiegand before the bottom fell out of FTX. But then also I have the both notable folks, but also new folks with innovative ideas. I've talked to people who are new in AI and creating AI solutions. I certainly talk, so I want to have a lot of business folks on who are building in the space too. I have folks who are investing and their life has been transformed by crypto. So I've had entertainers, independent artists come on and talk about being like the first person to accept Bitcoin for a recording project, or a jazz musician, B. Shane Frederick, who listened to me. He's one of the first people to listen to me at Advantage Evans Academy, and was able to fund his project through his investments in crypto, or someone who started in jail and learned about crypto and went from bars to Bitcoin. So like a lot of really cool, interesting folks whose life has been transformed. One of my first episodes actually was with Andreas Antonopoulos. That was like one of my first, I feel like he was number three. This is really interesting. He's a fascinating person. I didn't know him personally, but he was interested in not just doing the big ticket pods, but some like emerging pods. And no pod was more emerging than mine at the time. And he came on to talk with me to talk about Bitcoin being for the other 99%. And that was a really rich and interesting conversation too, and kind of challenged myths and assumptions about who was involved, who this would help. And so, yeah, that's just, it drops every week on Fridays, and you can listen to it on your favorite pod app or at techintersect.buzzsprout.com and tell me what you think.
Yep, excellent.
I have to have you on. Roy, you have to come on.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Oh, I just curious because, like, I mentioned, I don't know that I mentioned on this or prior to recording that I have 1,000 episodes released. Not on this. This is your, like, this will be episode number 49.
Awesome. But
based on all my other podcasts, and I know that there's a lot of kind of people in their 20s, the amount of cancellations and no shows for the crypto has exceeded the whole lot of the others together. Like, it rarely happens. But I spoke to a few other crypto podcasters, and they've, I'm just curious, has it happened to you as well?
No, that's crazy. Well, it has not. But I guess I'm never dealing fully with the crypto space per se, right? As somebody who has some business or law angle, or maybe I have a personal relationship and I will go on Twitter and drag them if they didn't show up. I've had a ton of technical difficulties, and I had some today, full transparency. But no, that's horrible. Delete their account. You just, like, no show is a no go. That is not cool.
No, I've had a few. And because I was saying, what's going on? Why? I spoke to a few others. It was like, sometimes they, I missed it. And then I've decided not to go on podcasts and stuff like that. Like, and it's like, just disrespectful. And I think my thoughts, because I think a lot of people, the mindset isn't there financially, yet they've been lucky with the crypto world, and they just kind of, they're kind of thinking they're better than other people. But there'd been a few that I spoke to, and I was like, is it just me and my show? And they had similar. But so you're lucky if you haven't had that situation.
Okay. All right. I'm looking out for this. And so I made you very nervous today, didn't I?
No, okay. you just made me realize that I'm asking the wrong guests on my show. So the book that you, you might talk to me about that.
Roy, I'm so excited about this book because I spend kind of like all day, or let me put it this way, not a week goes by, maybe this happens to you as well, in my DMs or when people submit comments and they have just a lot of questions based on a lot of the myths. And sometimes it's misinformation. Sometimes it's disinformation. Sometimes it's a lot of FUD, right? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And it just got overwhelming with, and I'm so frustrated usually with the headlines as well. It's like, that's a lazy headline. You're misleading people. I call BS. This is fiction. And so I wanted to write a book that is like a myth buster, right? And there are dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens. At some point I had to cut it off. It's like, all right, maybe I have a series of books. But what are the top 10 myths in the space that people, is particularly newbies, new entrants in the space, or those who had like FOMO and just got in with the last bull run, and they invest a lot of money without knowing what they're doing. They're buying a bunch of altcoins, we'll call them, not fully appreciating why Bitcoin is the OG, how ETH is important but different. Like, what is the point of it all, right? Rather than a ton of speculation. And then they got wrecked and they're like, oh, this is BS and blah, blah, blah. Right. And so it just reinforced the narrative of all of the myths that now they get to go out into the world and say. I was like, enough. Let's just separate fact from fictions. And so I accepted a deal from a publisher, Broad Book Group, fantastic woman-owned independent press, to deal with the top 10 myths in the industry. It's called Digital Money Demystified. And I describe it as, it's the book that you read before you dive into all of the courses or ways to learn, you know, how to vet coins and tokens and even what the difference between coins and tokens are, is, and all those, like, crypto is only for criminals. Crypto is a fad. Crypto is a scam. It's only for the tech and savvy finance person. It isn't regulated. We have some issues in regulations, but the laws didn't disappear. Ask Sam Bankman-Fried in his parents' very lovely basement, right? Waiting for his court day. Goodbye, bro. And all of these beliefs are keeping people from the possibility of even learning. It happened to me. I'm the most, I know you all won't believe this, I'm literally one of the most risk-averse people you could talk to about it. I'm an egghead lawyer, for God's sake, right? If I can do it, if my mother can do it, 76, sorry, mom, but I'm trying to make a point here. Literally anyone can do it, and we should. To learn about the alternatives, the dollar at this point, 5, 10 years, let's say 10 years from now, for sure, we'll be having a different conversation about the dollar. The dollar, I predict here, this is breaking news, will not be the global reserve currency. Countries are already moving away from it. It's just the reality. Every great nation at some point in time, they ebb and they flow. We're on the other side of that. This is what's happening. This is what we're seeing. You have to empower yourself to pivot quickly, which means you at a bare minimum better know what we're talking about. You have to understand the language. You have to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. You have to figure out what a wallet is. It's not only good for finance, but also for identity, a range of other really awesome things in this space. So Digital Money Demystified starts where people are and starts to demystify some things. And I venture to guess that even people that are in the space will find something for them that they thought they knew, but they didn't know.
That sounds brilliant, because I know that at the start I read, it was more Kindle books, I don't know, did I read 7 or 8? And it might as well have been French. It was just exactly. So badly. It was mainly kind of trial and error how I got through all of this. And what I found is, like, sometimes it was a case of a friend that was doing it came, sat with me and showed me how to use the ledger. I bought the ledger and I was panicking. And then when I was actually transferring, I was panicking.
Absolutely.
And as soon as you do it, you go, ah, it's grand. But it's just everything. It's like driving, really. That's the way I look at it. It's like you panic at the start and then you don't even think about it then as you go along.
Absolutely. Folks, it's coming out October 24th. It's available for pre-order on Amazon or wherever your favorite bookstore is. I love to support local or independent booksellers, so do that. I don't care how you get there. Get this book and let's figure this out together. And this is the thing that is in plain language. I work really hard to break down the jargon. And actually, there's a Digital Money Demystified Quick Start Bundle, where people can get checklists and analyze your risk assessment, figure out what that means for you, what you're most likely to invest in. There's a super short course you can finish in just an hour. And if you go to advantageevans.com, you can learn more information about that. That's another way to empower people now. They might pre-order the book, but maybe they don't want to wait until October. Here's something that is quick. It's easy. I call it fun. I mean, you can gut check me on that, fact check me. But yeah, I just want people to feel more comfortable. It reminds me of when I was first learning about wine. I just got back from Portugal and I ate and drank my way through Portugal. I highly recommend it.
I think I saw it on Instagram, your pictures of that. Yeah, yeah.
My bottles just arrived. Did you see that? So after this, I'll be very busy for the rest of the day. But wine can be super intimidating, right? You go in, they have these long lists. Now, I'm an egghead. I love to read the wine list, but I've taken a lot of time over the years to just become more familiar. We'll just kind of like close our eyes and pick like a price point because we don't know what the hell this thing is. And most of them are in French and they're intentionally difficult. Intentionally. It sounds a lot like finance, right? But when you get underneath it, which grape do you like? Which grape do you like? And I say the same for coins and tokens. We do a little research. It'll take us a long way. And this is way more valuable than wine. So I want us to get this right.
Brilliant. And I'll actually look forward to reading it. And when I do, I have to get you back because I thoroughly enjoy this. And what I love about you is you decomplex, you know, and this complex, you make it simple that you can understand. And that's the problem. A lot of people don't have that gift and you're able to actually explain things in a way that they can digest. So I wish you super success with it. And you might let people know where they can actually find you. I know you mentioned the website, but just mention the different handles and stuff that for people can follow.
Absolutely.
You.
Well, if in doubt, go to advantageevans.com, but I'm active on the Bird app as well for IP, for intellectual property, prof, like Professor Evans, IP Prof Evans, on all social media platforms. And I want people to be extremely careful. If you go over to Twitter, I think yesterday I posted no fewer than 27 frauds, imposters. They've gone on, they've picked my picture, they set up an account. A lot of it is bot driven, but some, I feel like it's one or a few people who just have nothing else to do but do this and to try and scam people. And they'll slide into your DMs and say, hey, I'm in Forex or I'm this or that. I don't know a thing about Forex. I know what it is, but I don't do it. I am not I invest personally. I do not invest money for people. I am a licensed lawyer who could lose my license if I were to do things like that. I am a full tenured professor at a top 70 law school. I am on the other side of 50. I don't want any shade, any problems. I want you to be careful and make good choices. Do not go for the head fake of the imposter impersonator. Sounds too good to be true, or someone sliding into your DM saying they could do something from you. I assure you it's not me. I'm kind of busy. I don't slide into DMs unless maybe you're super cute, but that then we're talking about something different. All right. So go to the original, and when in doubt, go to advantageevans.com and then we can connect.
Brilliant. Okay. I'll make sure I put all the links
back. All right.
The audio video. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag TechIntersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.